In the midst of this global crisis, the voices for justice are revealing what really matters. It is time for Planetary Makeover. Here we feature solutions and modern miracles in documentary videos that offer hope for our future and remind us all of our spiritual source. Long ago, it was forecast that at this time in history, extraordinary teachers, including the World Teacher, would emerge to help us as we build a world that works for everyone. Now, here's your host of Planetary Makeover, Mr. Dick Larson.
Hello, hello, hello. I'm Dick Larson. I'm your host for our show, Planetary Makeover. And I added earbuds this time. We had a little echo issue last time, so this time we're going to avoid that. You may notice I've got a Band-Aid on my forehead. That's due to a little minor surgery, but I'm fine. Thank you, if you wondered. So we're here every day. Every Monday at 5 p.m., every other Monday, 5 p.m. Pacific time, every other Monday with Planetary Makeover. And I will be your host for most of those shows, if not all. And we feature documentary videos. Primarily, we feature documentary videos by Francis Oman. And Francis Oman has been making videos for over 40 years and has received several international awards for her productions. By way of introduction, Francis was trained as an investigative reporter. She's also an artist. And I told you my name is Dick Larson, and my background is in business and counseling and teaching and practical spirituality. I say practical spirituality, what does that mean? Well, I'll tell you, I was raised as a Christian, and then I did, and then I studied the world's religions, and then I studied something called the Ageless Wisdom, which is not a religion, it's a philosophy, an ancient philosophy, as old as we are, as old as humanity is. And I found that particularly interesting, and I found it to hold a lot of truths. So I got interested in the Ageless Wisdom. If you want to check it out, the latest revealer of the Ageless Wisdom is a man named Benjamin Creme from London, spelled C-R-E-M-E. He traveled the world. He passed away a few years ago, but he traveled the world for over 40 years, giving out information on the latest update of the Ageless Wisdom teachings and how they apply to humanity. So we're going to be going there in our discussions after the video. We'll show about a 28-minute video today by Francis Oman, and then we'll take answers and comments that you have. I ask you to call in. So I certainly don't have all the answers, but maybe together we can make some sense out of where life is and where we're going, and maybe give you guys some hope in a very difficult time where hope is desperately needed. I have my note cards here, so I don't leave anything out. So please forgive me if I refer to them once in a while. There are three things that we ask of you as you watch our show and participate in our show. The first thing is, please give us a call after the video if you have comments or questions. We'll be happy to answer them as best we can and to create a little discussion around the topics of the video. The phone numbers are 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. Or if you want to call directly, you can call 323-744-4831. I'll say that again, 323-744-4831. So that's the first thing I ask of you, is to please give us a call so we can talk about it after the video. Second, please don't believe anything I say. Please don't believe anything we say on this show, in the videos or otherwise. That would be blind belief. And of course, I can't recommend blind belief to anybody. We're not here to change your mind. We're not here to change your belief system. We're not here to convince you that what we say is true. We're just here to give out our information and hope that some of it makes sense to you. So the third thing we ask of you is to please try to keep an open mind. Now, that can be more challenging than we realize, because over our lifetime, we develop our ideas and our belief system and our ethics system and so on, and we hold those pretty close to our vest. So what I'm asking you to do during this show is just kind of let our information sit in your lap like a brick. You don't have to do anything with it. You don't have to agree with it or disagree with it. Just kind of let our information come out and hear it, and see if maybe 10 or 20 or 30% of it makes any sense to you. Obviously, I think it will. I hope it will, and I think it will, or we wouldn't be doing this show. So that's what we ask. We ask you to give us a call later. We ask you to not believe anything we say. That's not why we're here. And we ask you to please try to keep an open mind as we go through our information. Okay, today's video, coming up in a second here, today's documentary is called If Buddha or Christ Returned Today, Would We Recognize Them? If the Buddha or the Christ returned today, would we recognize them? Now, you could be thinking about that while you watch the video, because I'd be interested to know what your views on are on whether that's even possible, that the video or Christ could return today. And if so, how do you think we would know them? How would we know them? How would we recognize them? Why would they return? You know, what would that be like for humanity and for you as an individual and me as an individual? So you might be thinking about that as you watch this documentary by Francis Oman. Let's see. Yeah. So let's go ahead and watch the video. It's about 28 minutes and we'll roll it right now.
With the world in such need, with millions starving to death in a world of plenty, humanity certainly could use some help in coming up with a plan to assure peace and the end of hunger. Some say it's in the stars, that we are at the end of one great age and at the beginning of a new age, and that this is the time for the return to Earth of a great divine being. What if the Buddha or the Christ returned now to help us out of the mess we are in? What if it really happened?
I think it's going to happen within our lifetime.
We heard some rumors coming out of London that there's a man there who's a political and social leader who's talking about brotherhood and sharing all the resources of the world and ending starvation. And I think something like that could happen. A person like that could come into the world.
I think it's possible.
So what do you think if somebody like that came into the world and everybody, you know, like TV and everybody interviewed him and people realized who he was, what do you think would be the first thing he would do?
He would probably try to get all the leaders of the countries to get in one meeting and try to agree on one plan.
Do you think that that's possible, that rumor might be true?
No, I think he just sounds like another racketeer. I mean, religions are basically just big con games, and I think that if God really did exist, we'd just have to abolish him. People can't become free as like some gift that's given to them from above.
I think it'd be great. That's something that's needed, because America itself it's not a united, I don't see it as a united country, because, you know, there were so many separate states and there's so many different things going on in each state. And I think if there was some, you know, powerful person who could bring all of us together and, you know, educate the people who are not educated, then that'd be perfect.
Frankly, I don't see much hope. I used to be more optimistic. Now I feel that the possibility, the best possibility, is a considerable amount of catharsis, a great deal of suffering, which may perhaps allow the survivors to rethink and reconstruct better than we did.
I don't know. He might be rubbed out immediately because he would present such a threat to the current power structure. He would represent such a threat to the current governments and politicians that they would just get rid of him immediately. If he survived, actually, And if he was very careful, he might actually begin to affect some kind of change. I haven't heard of this man that you're referring to, but Gandhi was certainly an example of that. I think he tried to lead people towards discovering themselves, towards a little bit more self-consciousness, rather than just using them for his own purposes.
I would be grateful that something like this was finally happening, because I mean, I think it should have happened a long time ago, and that, you know, and if this guy had been around 40 or 50 years ago, he wouldn't have had nuclear weapons at all.
The coming of a Christ, a world teacher, into the world is, of course, a tremendous climactic event with enormous repercussions.
Just let me say that what I say as an outcome of my own personal experience, and what I say I do with total conviction of its truth. But I assure you, I present it to you not as dogma, but for your consideration only. If it appears to you to be right, reasonable, logical, if it has for you the ring of truth, then by all means accept it. Otherwise, not. And quite honestly, I don't mind whether you accept it or not. Luckily for me, my role is simply to present the information, thereby creating a climate of hope, of expectancy, into which the Christ can emerge without infringing our human free will. If you find it difficult to accept, and there may be among this audience, I had some indication of it outside, a number of people of the more orthodox, more fundamentalist persuasion. Just let me say that the one I'm talking about, the master of all the masters, I submit to you, is now with us once again in the world, as he was with us in Palestine when then he worked through his disciple Jesus.
The Buddhists have got the name right. The personal name of the Christ is Maitreya, the happy one. One foretold 600 years before the manifestation of the Christ in Palestine by Gautama Buddha, to come now at the dawn of this age, the cycle which is just beginning, to take humanity into a golden age, to restore the spiritual basis of life, and to show humanity the way through joy, through love, to manifest its innate divinity. He called him, as St. Paul called him, the teacher alike of angels and of men. So 2,000 years ago, the Christ manifested himself as Jesus for 3 years. This time, he comes himself and under law, because we have called him, we have invoked him into the world. Two things are necessary to bring the Christ into the world. One, the cosmic date, the fact that the point of overlapping between the age of Pisces and the age of Aquarius has come to a point where the teacher must descend. What is called the fiat of the Lord rings out, and the Christ is called on to descend. The other thing which is needed to bring him into the world is the call from humanity, the invocation from humanity. And throughout the war, and that war, from the point of view of the masters, is from 1914 to 1945, a war which went on in underground in 1918 and came above ground again in 1939. Throughout that war, the cry for help from humanity rose to the Christ and beyond the Christ, and he responded and decided that the time had come. His knowledge of the cosmic date showed him the time had come for him to return to the world. He hoped to be able to come into the world around 1950. It was not to be. But he said he would come, and he made the decision, announced the decision in June 1945, at the end of the war. He said he would come when a measure of peace had been restored to the world. A measure of peace. It didn't have to be total peace everywhere, but a measure of peace in the widest sense. And when the principle of sharing was beginning to govern economic affairs. Sharing is divine. When you share, you recognize God in your brother. He said the first step into sharing is the first step into your divinity. We are gods. Potentially we are gods. We are divine beings, whether we know it or not. But of course we demonstrate very little of that divinity. When we share, we enter for the first time into the correct relationship of man to man. And when I say man, I mean woman, of course, as well. Man to man and man to God. The next step forward, the destined, planned by the deity who ensouls the planet, the next step forward for humanity is the creation of right human relationships. Right relationships between man and man and between man and God. Now, if one person is starving to death in a world of plenty, a world which is burgeoning with food, then you don't have right human relationships. When you have 450 million starving to death, then, of course, you have the very opposite of right human relationships. To take the next step forward in our evolution, we must share. And on that basis rests the whole future of the self.
Brother's hand and know him as yourself. Take your brother's need as the measure for your action and solve the problems of the world. There is no other cause.
Many years ago, the great Spanish poet Federico Garcia Lorca predicted, "The day that hunger is eradicated from the earth, there will be the greatest spiritual explosion that the world has ever known. Humanity cannot imagine the joy that will burst into the world on the day of that great revolution." We have now seen the world's hunger on television in our own living rooms. Could the fact that we are finally doing something about world hunger mean that Lorca's prediction is coming true, and that a great spiritual teacher is actually returning now to signal the spiritual explosion that was predicted when we end hunger on earth?
Our economic system is totally, utterly corrupt, obscenely corrupt, obscenely unjust. Millions starving to death in the midst of plenty. Millions more, some 800 million people living in a state of total, absolute poverty in the world. Grinding out an existence such as we would not allow our pets, our cats and dogs to do. That is what brings the Christ into the world. To change all of that. To show us that we can no longer support what he calls that degradation. 50 million people died last year from starvation in a world with a large surplus of food. 15 million children die every year before they reach the age of 5 from starvation. Millions more die from malnutrition, from the diseases of malnutrition. If you add these figures together, you get the equivalent of a Holocaust like Hiroshima once every 3 days. Add to that those who die from malnutrition, and you get a Hiroshima once every day. 100,000 people die every day from starvation and starvation-related diseases. In a world where, if you leave aside all the food, I'm quoting now from statistics given out by the Hunger Project, if you leave aside all the meat, all the dairy produce, all the vegetables, all the fruit, and take only the grains of the world, and divide that among all the people in the world, every man, every woman, and every child would have 2 large loaves each a day. So just on the grain alone, the whole world could live without any sign of starvation. And yet, each year, these millions die. That division in the world, that blasphemy in the world, is one of the major concerns of the Christ. The decision rests with mankind. We have to decide whether we want these changes which he will advocate. Do we want them?
How can you be content with the molds within which you now live, when millions starve and die?
This is why I have always been searching. In the political scene, spirituality has always been sort of put down. And if you talk about spirituality in politics, and people say, what are you talking about? Be serious. The reality is not that easy. Because when you go to a spiritual world or a religious world, both politics or economics or economic world, is something that you stay away from. First of all, that the world resources and food has to be shared. Shared, not given like a charity. The wealthy nations give to the poor because we got plenty and give some to the poor nations who need them. But share equally. The resources of the world belong to the humanity as whole. The number of the people who consider themselves really happy will not be that much from the poor nations or people in the poor nations. So if we can trust that we will have a better life and that there is enough food in the world to feed everybody in the world, if we keep that in mind, then we will not be scared, we will not be afraid, oh, we're going to lose everything. And I think it's a great future, and I feel like this is why I am here in this world, to see the kingdom of God in Christian terms, or the nirvana in the Buddhist term, will be manifested in this world.
Now, people all over the world expect the Christ. Christians expect him under that name. They look for the return of Jesus Christ, who came in Palestine and revealed God as love. And the Christ through Jesus promised to come once again at the end of the age, and many of you will know we are now at the end of the age, and the Christ has kept his promise. Now this is seen by many Christian groups as a phenomenon to do only with the Christian religious groups, churches, and so on. Whereas I would try to show that this is not so. The Christ comes as a world teacher for the whole of humanity, and he is awaited by other groups, other religions, just as fervently. They know him by other names. The Jews, of course, know him as the Messiah, and they wait for the Messiah, as they have done for millennia. He came as a Jew in Palestine, and they did not recognize him. He is awaited by the Muslims under the name of the Imam Mahdi, and he is awaited by the Hindus as Krishna. He is awaited by the Buddhists under his real name, Maitreya. They wait for the fifth Buddha, Maitreya Buddha, foretold to come now by the previous Buddha, Sakyamuni Buddha.
So how have people in Japan taken to the message?
I use the word Christ, I use the word Maitreya. Maitreya Buddha. In Japanese we call Miroku Bosatsu. But a lot of Buddhists also know it's a, you know, Miroku Bosatsu is Maitreya.
In the poorest countries in the world, this crown fills me with shame. My brothers, how can you watch these people?
The words to this song are taken from one of the messages from the Christ communicated through Benjamin Krem. Krem gives the information that the Christ is now living amongst the poor in London as an ordinary man, awaiting our invitation into the world. He is here to show us the way out of the present chaos.
Learn to share.
spirituality has to manifest, has to be manifested in politics, in economics, in science, in education. And I just went, hooray, this is how it should be. And the more I read his message and, you know, his compassion and love just permeates from that message. And yet, when you really think about it, he appears as world revolutionary leader to change the world politically, socially, economically, fundamentally changed. And he will be the advocator of that political change, economic and social, fundamental change, and through a spiritual and peaceful means. And this is exactly what I have envisioned. And when I first read his message, it's like tears. I did not have any emotional reaction, and yet tears just start pouring down through my eyes. And it's like, this is what I'm here for.
Has arrived some time ago, and the Christ entered the modern world from the Himalayas, not from some mythical heaven, where he's been postulated as residing by the Christian groups, but from his retreat high in the Himalayan snows, and entered our modern world on the 19th of July, 1977. And from that time has been waiting the opportunity to emerge under law into our midst without infringing our free will. Now, in 1959, I was contacted for the first time by one of the masters, and very soon afterwards was contacted by Maitreya himself, introduced by my master. And he gave me to understand that he himself was coming into the world. The preparation for the return of the Christ has been going on for 2,000 years and has culminated in not only his return to the world, but for the first time in countless thousands of years of his group, the group of which he is the head and leader, the group which the disciples of the masters call the spiritual hierarchy of masters and initiates. The Christ is head of that body of, in the case of the masters, perfected men. Men who have gone ahead of us in evolution, reached the end of this long, apparently endless evolutionary journey in which each one of us is still engaged. Having reached that point, they are free to leave this planet. This planet has nothing further to teach them. But many of these perfected men elect to remain for certain periods, sometimes thousands of years, on the earth to oversee the evolution of the rest of us. They are the custodians of all energies entering this planet, and really, in the very deepest sense, they are the guardians of the planet, the teachers and the guardians and the inspirers of humanity. And they have worked for thousands of years through the agency of their disciples in the world, who are men and women like us in the world. Give me the name of any great man or woman throughout history who has affected powerfully our culture and our civilizations, and you will have given me the name of an initiated disciple of one or other of the masters. All the great ones, the Platos and the Aristotles and the Shakespeare's and the Dante's and the Leonardo's and the Abraham Lincoln's and the Joan of Arc's and the Einsteins and the Schweitzer's, all these great, powerfully effective men and women in the world have done their work through the inspiration and guidance of the masters from behind the scenes. The masters have lived themselves in the remote mountain and desert areas of the world since Atlantean days. They are to be found, when they are found, and they are found only by those who have a right to find them, in the Andes, in the Rockies, in the Cascades, in the Carpathians, in the Urals, the Atlas, the Himalayas, and various other mountain and desert areas of the world. from those retreats, often high in the snows, they have overseen, beneficently overseen, our gradual expansion of consciousness, which has brought us from a stage of early animal man up to the point where we now find ourselves, which you might feel is not very high at all, given the state of the world at present. But compared with early animal man, an Einstein or an Abraham Lincoln is a very, very great achievement of the human race. Well, we're not all Einsteins or Abraham Lincolns, but nevertheless, the broad general level of humanity is now so advanced that the masters of the wisdom can perform an event which they have been rehearsing and preparing for over 500 years, their return to the everyday world, to live among us, known to us at last for who they are in their own full spiritual potency, to act as the guides, the teachers, the inspirers of humanity in this coming age, the age of Aquarius, which is just dawning. And just before the end of the gospel story, before the crucifixion, if you remember, the Christ sent his disciples into the town of Jerusalem and told them that there they would find a man carrying a pitcher of water on his shoulders. He told them to follow that man to a house and there prepare the feast of the Passover. In that apparently insignificant vignette, he foreshadowed his future role as the teacher, the avatar, for the age of Aquarius. The man carrying the water pot, of course, is the age-old symbol for Aquarius. And look at the world into which he has come. A world which is divided terribly, dangerously, in mainly two ways, politically and economically. East and West, North and South. The East-West division, the political division, is obvious. The world is divided into two armed camps. The NATO countries, America and her allies, and the Soviet bloc, Russia and her allies. And that is the political reality in the world today. Two armed camps with a nuclear arsenal which can destroy all life many times over. That political impasse which we're witnessing, that dangerous situation East and West, is tied up with another equally dangerous situation which may not be so familiar to you. That is the division between the North nations and the South nations, the developed world and the third world. The tensions inherent in the discrepancy between our different standards of living have within it the seeds of a third world war. At the moment, we in the West, the developed world, usurp and waste 3/4 of the world's food. At least 80%, rather more, of the world's raw materials, resources, energy sources, and of course all the scientific, technical know-how of the world. The third world must make do, but 2/3 of the world's population must make do with the rest. 1/4 of the world's food. Not more than 15 to 20% of the world's resources and energy, and of course none of the scientific know-how of the world. Some of you are becoming more and more familiar with the true situation in the third world. When I first started coming to America, which was January 1980, my first tour, I found an absolute, almost total lack of concern for the third world. A total ignorance about the state of play in the world, between the developed world and the third world. A total ignorance about the number of people hungry and even starving to death in the third world. Suddenly, there is a new situation. The famine in Ethiopia has focused the eyes of the world on the situation in the world.
All right, there we have it. That's part one. There are two parts to this. The next show will be the second half of that video. And please give us a call at 888-627-6008 or at 323-744-4831 with any comments or questions. And we can maybe discuss this whole concept of if the Buddha, could the Buddha and Christ come now? Either one. And if so, how would we know it's them? And obviously, Benjamin Krem thinks that that has happened, that they're here waiting for the right time to come forward, and that they're basically wrapped up into one individual because we have worldwide communication today, and we don't need five teachers when one can fulfill the prophecies of all the world's major religions and come to serve people who are religious and people who are not. So that's kind of the message from the Ageless Wisdom, the latest revealer, Benjamin Krem. And so we would just like to talk about that for a little while. What do you think? What do you think? How would you recognize him? Who is the Christ? You know, Benjamin Krem talked about Jesus being the Christ and then Maitreya being the Christ, working through Jesus. So we can discuss the possibilities. Let's see. What is the ageless wisdom? That's a question that people often ask after they hear a presentation like this. So let me see if I can answer that question briefly for you. The ageless wisdom, I mentioned it earlier, is an ancient philosophy. It's not a religion. It's an ancient philosophy as old as humanity. And you know that old saying, more shall be revealed. As humanity is ready to understand more and more, then more and more of the ageless wisdom is revealed to us through teachers that are given, that are sent and given to humanity to help us make the next step forward in our evolution, because that's what we're here for. We're here to evolve. We're all evolving. Every kingdom is evolving. The mineral kingdom, the plant kingdom, the animal kingdom, the human kingdom, and even the next kingdom up, the spiritual kingdom, is evolving. That's why these great masters, these great beings that went through evolution ahead of us and became perfected human beings, perfected men and women, they learned all the lessons that planet Earth has to teach over thousands of lifetimes. And when you reach a point where you've learned all the lessons, you can graduate from planet Earth. You don't need a body anymore. You're a permanent consciousness or spirit. And there are 63 of these great, the senior members of our spiritual kingdom, 63 of these great beings who have hung around planet Earth because they can go other places. There are seven paths that you can take once you become a master, according to the ageless wisdom. They have hung around behind the scenes in the Himalayas and the Rockies and the desert, the mountains and desert regions of the world, as Benjamin Krem said, to be the inspiration behind humanity, all the great steps forward for humanity in evolution. So that's what we're here to do. We're here to learn and grow. And so the ageless wisdom is a philosophy about what life is all about. What is the meaning of life? What is the meaning of our lives? Why are we here? What is the purpose of creation? We have a caller. I see we have Sue on line one. Go ahead, Sue. 63 of these great beings who have hung around planet Earth because they can go other places. Okay, let's try John on line two. That didn't seem to work. John, on line two, go ahead, please.
Yes, hello, Dick. I was curious, how could Jesus and Maitreya both be the Christ? That's confusing because, of course, we're told that Jesus is the one and only Son of God. And what's up with that?
Absolutely. Thank you for that. Thank you for that question. And I will give you the answer from the point of view of the ageless wisdom, which obviously makes a lot of sense to me, or I wouldn't be here doing this. The age-old way, it's a great question, the age-old way for the masters to send their teachings to humanity over the millennia have been that they get a great disciple of theirs, a very advanced human being who's ready to come back to life again. And ahead of coming back in a physical body, that disciple agrees to give out their teaching. So I'll give you an example. Prince Gautama. Prince Gautama was born, and when he came of age, he had agreed to give out the Buddha's teachings. So the Buddha worked through Prince Gautama by overshadowing him. What does overshadow mean? It means that the Buddha, with Prince Gautama's permission, always, put his consciousness in Prince Gautama's mind. So when Prince Gautama spoke, he was speaking as the Buddha. He was giving out the Buddha's teachings. So people knew that. And so Prince Gautama became known as Gautama Buddha, because he was giving out the Buddha's teachings. The exact same thing according to the Ageless Wisdom. Again, don't believe anything we're saying here. We're just giving you our information to see if any of it makes sense. So Jesus agreed to do the same thing for the Christ. The Christ is not a person. It wasn't Jesus' last name. Nobody had last names then. They were all known as their name and where they came from. He was Jesus of Nazareth, you know? And so the Christ is actually a position in our spiritual kingdom. In our spiritual hierarchy, there's a very advanced position called the Christ, and that is someone who's gone through evolution ahead of us, become a perfected human being, and has advanced to the point, has evolved to the point where they can embody the Christ energy, which is the love of God. They can actually embody the love of God. And that is the Christ, and we have such a person in our spiritual kingdom who can embody the love of God, and that is Maitreya, the happy one, who is the Christ for planet Earth, according to the Ageless Wisdom. Jesus agreed to give out the Christ teachings. So Maitreya overshadowed Jesus, put his thoughts, his consciousness into Jesus with Jesus' permission. And you know what? This was a great sacrifice by the Master Jesus. He's a great master now. Because Jesus could have given out great teachings on his own. But he agreed to do this. And so he gave out the teachings of Maitreya, the world teacher, the Christ for planet Earth. He gave out those teachings from the time of his baptism by John the Baptist in the River Jordan. He, from that time, for the 3 years of his teaching until he was crucified, Jesus gave out the teachings of the Christ and became known as Jesus the Christ. And so that's how Jesus could be the Christ for those 3 years that he was overshadowed by Maitreya, the Christ for planet Earth, and how Maitreya is the Christ. Now, they're both great masters now. They're best friends. They work together all the time. You know, the masters, the ascended masters, the many names, ascended masters, lords of compassion, the masters of the wisdom, they have no egos. So they don't argue about things. Nobody steps on their toes because they don't care. They work together all the time, Jesus and Maitreya. They're great friends because of their close relationship when Jesus was teaching for those 3 years. They became, you know, very, very intimate and close to each other, and they still are. And they work together all the time. And like I said, Jesus is one of the great, great masters now. So that's how Jesus could be the Christ and Maitreya could be the Christ. And we have Mark on line four.
Hello?
Mark? Yeah.
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Thank you.
Okay. My question is, have you had some personal experiences that would lead you to believe that what Benjamin Krem said in his talk?
Yes, I have. I have. You know, I just want to start with a kind of a general experience that everybody can have. And that is, you know, people say, how do you know there's a God? Here's the problem. You can't show God to anybody. You can't prove that there's a God to anybody's satisfaction who doesn't want to believe it. But it's very personal, isn't it? You know there's a God if you have experienced God working in your life. If you've experienced God in your life, that's how you know there's a God. It's not just a belief. It's an actual experience as well. That's very, very important that the two are combined, because that's where the dedication comes from. That's where the commitment comes from. That's how come people are convinced. Well, I have not only experienced God working in my life, but I have experienced Maitreya working in my life and Jesus. I was raised a Christian. Jesus working in my life. For about 25 to 30 years, there was a period, they're not doing it quite so much now because they're very busy getting ready to have Maitreya come forward. They're working full time, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, the masters are. But there was a time for about 25 years where they were appearing to people all around the world. And they were appearing in different ways. They could appear, you know, they are the masters of all the energy of our planet. They're not affected by gravity, for example. And they're the master scientists. So they can show up in 42 places at once if they want to. And you can shake their hand and they're solid physical and they're just as real as can be, but they're in 42 places at once. They travel by thought. Well, they have appeared to people. It's been documented. They've appeared to people as children, as older adults. They've appeared as African Americans, Asian Americans, Caucasians. They've appeared in all kinds of different venues and different ways to people. And when people have an experience, when they think they talked to or saw a master, what they would do is they would write in to Benjamin Krem at Share International. He was the editor of a magazine. The magazine is still around. It's called Share International Magazine. And he was the chief editor. And people would write to him or send him an email. And they would share their experience. And then if it was a true experience of a master, Benjamin Krem would check with one of the masters. He was trained how to be in touch, how to be in communication with one of these ascended masters. And Benjamin Krem would ask his master if this was a real experience of a master. And if it was, he would publish that letter in Share International Magazine. And then at the end of the letter, he would say that it was confirmed by his master that it was one of the masters. And he would usually say which master it was. Well, I had several experiences that seemed like it might be a master. And so I wrote letters after each one, some of them, I didn't write all of them, to Share International, and Benjamin Krem published them and said which master it was. So I have seen Maitreya. I haven't always talked to them, but I've seen them. And there's ways that you can know when you've seen a master. I saw Maitreya as a homeless person. I saw Jesus as a homeless person twice. I saw Jesus as a very young girl who was about to take her first communion. We talked for a while, and she knew too much to be like a 10-year-old girl, you know? And so I wrote to Benjamin Krem, and he said, yes, she was the master Jesus. There's usually three ways people can know that they've seen a master. One is there's something really special in the eyes. They may be real deep, or they may be bright, or there's something in the eyes that is very different and catches their attention. That's one way people know. Another way people know they've seen a master is that for no reason at all of a sudden they're just filled with joy. They're so happy, and there's no reason for them to be that happy right now, but they're just filled with love and joy, and they feel great. For no apparent reason. That's the second reason way. And then the third way that people know that they've seen a master is it's a very ordinary experience. I was driving home from meditation, group meditation one night called transmission meditation. I stopped at a red light, and the sun was just setting, and I looked over at a park bench, and there was this homeless man all slouched down in a filthy trench coat with a beard and a mustache, and he looked at me like this. And my very first thought was, that man is looking right through me. Well, I went home. It was an ordinary experience. I saw a guy sitting on a bus bench. I went home. I couldn't get him out of my mind. He kept appearing to me and thinking about him. When that happens, chances are really, really good that you've seen a master. Very ordinary experience. And yet you can't get it out of your mind. So those are three ways. Another way is you see him, then you look back, and all of a sudden he's gone. He's vanished into thin air. The masters are known to do that too. So a lot of people have seen the masters. It's not just about me. I'm just an ordinary person. But yes, I've had some experiences where I was absolutely convinced that it was a master, one of the masters, probably Maitreya or Jesus. There's a master in Japan who a lot of people have experienced in Japan that they've experienced as well. So thank you for your question. I see Sue is still on line one. Is she still there? No? Okay, we've got Ray on line five. Hi, Ray. Ray, can you hear me?
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Go ahead.
Yeah, I had a question. If Maitreya is the fifth Buddha, I read about this a bit. How can he also be the Christ?
Yeah. Thank you, Ray. I appreciate your question. Because we're in worldwide communication now, connected by satellites around the planet all the time, we have instantaneous worldwide communication. And so each of the major religions, as Benjamin Krem said in the video, each of the major religions is expecting their great teacher, and there have been signs in each major religion that fulfill prophecies that say that their teacher will come soon. The Muslims are expecting their great teacher, the Imam Mahdi. Imam means teacher. The Mahdi is the next great teacher for them to come. The Hindus are expecting Krishna to return about this time. The Jews are looking for the Messiah to return. The Christians are looking for the Christ to return, but most Christians are looking for that to be at the end of the world. My information is that Jesus is back, but it's not going to be the end of the world. He's going to fulfill the prophecy Benjamin Krem talked about, where he said that he would appear at the end of the age. And it's the end of the age of Pisces. He was the teacher for the age of Pisces. He and the Buddha came about within reasonable time of each other. The Buddha taught the wisdom of God. Jesus taught the love of God. It's been 2,000 years since Jesus. It's the end of the Piscean age. He knew he was the teacher for the age of Pisces. The fish is the symbol for Pisces. That's why all those analogies in the Christian Bible, I'll make you fishers of men. He fed the crowd with fish. Two of the symbols for Christianity, one is the cross, one is the fish. It's because he was the teacher for the age of Pisces. Well, he's back now, and he's going to work with the Christian church. The Roman Catholic Church is the largest church in the world. Christian church is the largest religion in the world. He's going to work with the Christian church and get it back to its basic original teachings, get rid of all the man-made stuff that's blocking people from the joy and the love and the happiness they can get from their religion and healing. The religions are here to teach and heal according to the ageless wisdom. And most of them do not a very good job of teaching and almost no healing. Jesus is going to change that. This will be the last pope. Jesus will be the head of the church. The way they can both be the same person is because of worldwide communication. One person can come and fulfill all those prophecies in one. Maitreya is the Christ for planet Earth, according to the ageless wisdom. He's also Maitreya Buddha. He's the fifth Buddha. All in one person. It's an amazing time to be alive. We are in for some real special times. It's quite a gift. Okay. I want to thank everybody that called in. Wonderful questions. Thank you so much. And I want to remind you that we are here, Planetary Makeover, showing videos, documentary videos, and discussing them, taking questions every other Monday at 5 p.m. Pacific time. And so I hope to see you in 2 weeks. Hope to hear from you in 2 weeks. And again, thank you so much. Join us again on BBS Radio and Television, where we'll be able to talk again. Thank you so much. God bless. Be well.
Tune in right here in 2 weeks for the next Planetary Makeover Show as we watch and discuss another video by Francis Oman in light of the timely and non-denominational ageless wisdom teachings that will fill your spirit and inspire you with hope for the future, a world that works for everyone. So be prepared to call in and share your views and questions in another uplifting episode of Planetary Makeover.